This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Dozens of organizations from Canada, El Salvador, and around the world have confronted Canadian-Australian mining company OceanaGold, whose subsidiary is suing the nation of El Salvador for $301 million. El Salvador's offense was refusing to grant a permit to a gold mine that would contaminate 60% of the nation's drinking water. The Council of Canadians, the Latin American Solidarity Network, the Mining Injustice Solidarity Network, and others have demanded that the mining company withdraw the lawsuit. The court case was heard on Monday, September 15, 2014, at the International Centre for the Settlement of Investment Disputes in Washington, D.C. Council of Canadians board member Paul Manley arrived in El Salvador on Sunday, September 14, 2014. Paul was there to represent the Council of Canadians and to take part in an international delegation that is examining the situation in El Salvador.
Paul Manley joins us in the studio today. Welcome back to People First Radio, Paul.
Thanks for having me in.
Paul, what did you see in El Salvador?
We went to a number of different regions. So we went to San Sebastian, La Union, where there was a mine that was owned by the Commerce Group. It was a historic mine that was originally opened in 1907, and it was, a typical kind of dig-into-the-ground sort of older-style operation. And when Commerce Group picked it up, they turned it into an open pit mine. And the gold is found in lava rock. It's fine particles of gold, and so they have to crush the rock up. They soak it in cyanide and other chemicals to release the gold. And then they took all the tailings and they dumped it on a hillside, and all of those tailings end up becoming acidic over time, exposed to oxygen, and the rain hits it and it all flows downhill, and arsenic, heavy metals, iron all flow into the river below. And, people are contaminated by it. There's a lot of kidney failure, people dying from kidney failure. The fish downstream have been wiped out, etc. So we saw this example of mining in El Salvador, and the company Commerce Group was denied their permit to continue operating the mine, and they had an investor state dispute suing El Salvador. That dispute was dismissed on a technicality. They were suing under CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, which has a clause that says that if you discriminate or if you have indirect expropriation of property, that you can sue through these tribunals, these secretive tribunals that are outside of the judicial system, outside of the parliamentary system. They're international tribunals, basically corporate lawyers who decide based on the terms of the trade agreement whether there's been a violation of the trade agreement or not. So they don't take into consideration environmental concerns, health concerns, social concerns, things like that. It's all about the trade agreements themselves. And so that was day one. The next day we were at a rally outside the World Bank headquarters in San Salvador, where people were protesting about the case that's now going before the ICSID, the International Center for the Settlement of Investor Disputes, that's housed at the World Bank in Washington, D.C. And that's the case that started September 15th, the final hearings for it. And that's going to drag out for a while. People don't know what's going on there because it's, again, a secret arbitration panel that decides based on the trade agreements that have been signed, and the CAFTA part of it failed. It originally was a company called Pacific Rim, based out of Vancouver, that had proposed a mine in the Cabañas region, and it was rejected because it failed an environmental review, and the El Salvador government rejected it. So they started a lawsuit, first $75 million, and then they upped it to $301 million based on the loss of anticipated profit for that mine. So they had done some research and some exploration. But when the mine was rejected, they took their case to ICSID, originally trying to use CAFTA as well, the Central America Free Trade Agreement. They had their headquarters in the Cayman Islands, but they opened up an office in Nevada. I guess they used the Cayman Islands for tax haven. They opened up an office in Nevada to try to sue under CAFTA, and it was rejected. But they'd also had another suit based on laws in El Salvador to protect investors, and that's what it's carrying forward under the ICSID case right now.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are a lot of acronyms for just a casual news reader or somebody who's listening and paying attention for the first time. There are a lot of acronyms, and there are a lot of complexities in these trade agreements, from what I gather. This was a real eye-opener for me. I'm wondering if you could just tell us, how is it that an international trade agreement can trump seemingly trump the rights of a nation? How does it come to that? And how did El Salvador get involved in this situation, you might say, from a government level to begin with?
Well, El Salvador was, you know, encouraged to get to sign on to CAFTA, and they signed on to CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, based on trying to open up their markets for trade. And so we hear this term, free trade. And the idea is to open up markets and to make sure that there is open trade, that barriers are taken down, that companies aren't discriminated against. But the key problem with these agreements is the investor-state clauses within them. And investor-state allows corporations to sue governments for laws, measures, and policies that inhibit what corporations can do and constrain their profitability. So they can sue companies, corporations can sue for the loss of potential profit or the loss of anticipated profit. And the way trade agreements are done, they trump international environmental treaties, international labor treaties, etc. They're just, I don't know, placed on a higher pedestal. And it is a very bizarre situation. It's like a supernatural level of governance that goes beyond our court systems. Right now, the Harper government is going to announce tomorrow that they've, you know, finished the deal with the European Union for the Comprehensive Economic Trade Agreement, which has investor state in it as well. And the Europeans, like, there's no opposition to it in Canada except from the Green Party with Elizabeth May, the NDP, who are normally opposed to investor state. That's their policy. Have not come out against the investor state in the European trade agreement. But the Europeans are saying, why do we need an investor state clause in this trade agreement when we, you know, the country of Canada and the European countries all have great judicial systems?
They're
advanced, developed countries with advanced democracies and advanced judicial systems. Why can't these disputes be settled in the courts in these countries rather than setting it up to these arbitration panels, which are basically three corporate lawyers sitting in a hotel room somewhere, one on the government side, one on the corporate side, and one sort of in between. These people, these lawyers, have a vested interest in seeing these disputes carry on. They make $1,000 an hour deciding them. And they have a vested interest in seeing this whole process carry on like that.
So are you suggesting, in a sense, that this particular method for dealing with, you might say, investor concerns has hit up against the wall or the fortress, so to speak, of stronger democracies? And there's a reason for pushback at this point?
Yes. Yeah, there's a reason for pushback for sure. Germany has said that they oppose the investor state provisions in CETA, and they are pushing to have the negotiations opened up. But the European Union has said that they will not open up the negotiations again because they think it'll kill the CETA agreement. The CETA agreement was leaked by the Europeans. The Harper government won't let us see the deal. They've kept it secret. They're not going to, you know, they don't have, there's been no parliamentary debate on it. There's been no public debate on it. But the document was released in Germany and was on a German television website. And, you know, a number of countries are opposed to the investor state provisions in it, France included.
Now, if we go back to the situation in El Salvador, when the local, you might say the local people or the local organizations, and I guess that became more of a national movement over time, you can let us know about that, when they began to stand up against the plans of the mining company, there were also allegations of human rights abuses and things that happened at that point. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, well, we spent day three traveling to the Cabañas region. We went to Radio La Victoria in Cabañas, which is a community radio station, and they told us how Pacific Rim tried to bribe them, basically, to promote the mine, and they refused to do so. First of all, they're very community-driven radio station, so it's not just programmers that are deciding what's going on. It's very much community organizations that drive the whole process, and they're very much trusted for their reliability in telling the truth, and so they refused the bribes by the mining company and started to investigate, you know, what was going on in other countries with mining and what the implications were for having a mine in the Cabañas region. And then they started to tell their listeners about it. And what happened was that the radio station workers, the volunteers and staff were all starting to be threatened and followed by people. And there was anonymous threats, you know, put under the door, etc. One programmer was told, was inside the station by herself when other programmers and staff had gone into San Salvador, which is hours away, for another meeting and a big press conference. And they told her they were waiting outside for her. She ended up having to leave the country based on the threats. But five environmentalists were murdered in 2009, including Marcelo Riveras, who was kidnapped, tortured, and his body was found in a well. Dora Sorto, who was shot with a high-powered rifle while gathering, you know, getting water at a community well. She was 8 months pregnant, and her unborn child was murdered as well. And her two-year-old son was injured in the attack. And another environmentalist's daughter was murdered as well. So there was threats, intimidation, and violence based on opposition to the mine. All anti-mining activists that were targeted.
Now, I want to point out that from my read on this, that there isn't any evidence that ties the corporation or the company to these crimes, and there probably isn't any evidence that ties the governments or people within the government in El Salvador to these crimes either. So what do people make of them?
Well, there was a court decision that said that it was, based, actually, I can tell you what, just having a quick look at it, the name of the court, it says it's due to the presence of Pacific Rim, and it was determined by the Court of Santa Peque in April 15th, 2013. So 4 years after the crimes. But they were saying it was due to the presence of Pacific Rim. I mean, it caused a lot of conflict in the community. You know, when you sell the idea, the idea of Pacific Rim having this mine, El Dorado, they sold the idea to the public that, you know, people are going to make money working in this thing. And the thing is that in actual fact, of the wages were going to be pretty low, the number of jobs were going to be pretty low, and the consequences were going to be very high for contamination. The area where they were proposing the mine was close to the Sampala River, which flows into the Lempa River watershed, and the Lempa River provides domestic water for 60% of the population of the country. It's a very densely populated country. It's small. It's already had a lot of environmental degradation to it, and it's the wrong place for large-scale open-pit mining. Mm.
Paul, what did you learn on the ground there with respect to human rights in a general sense and the ability of communities to stand up for what it is they want to do in their lives?
Well, as I mentioned, there were the threats, intimidation, murder, kidnapping that went on, but people are very resilient in these communities. So you know, the delegation ended really in observing. The delegates took part in election monitoring training and then monitored an election in San Jose, Las Flores, which was a community that had a referendum on whether mining could take place within the municipal territory. And it's a provision under El Salvador's law that communities can create ordinances. And so this was a first, a historic vote. They've never had a referendum of this kind in El Salvador before. So it was a historic moment. 99% of the community voted no to this. And so I think it was 811 votes to against and 4 or 5 for. So I spent that day traveling around to different polling stations and documenting on video and photographing. And then the next day there was a big press conference. Right now, both governments, the ARENA government, which is right wing, and the FMLN government, which is left wing, have both opposed this mine because there is huge community opposition to it. And that could change. One of the things that we did do as well, there was a mining activist from other countries in Central America, Canada, United States, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua. And they brought up situations in all of their communities. So KI in Northern Ontario, the KI First Nation had opposed mines there and eventually won. But some of the other areas like Guatemala, just brutal repression on the part of the government, working with the mines. And then, these goon squads that are working for the mining companies. And, there was a whole series of photos of the community just brutalized by the police and the military for blocking mining companies trying to come into their territories.
Paul Manley, we have to leave it there. Obviously, this is a story that isn't finished, and there are a lot of things yet to be told in respect to this. We look forward to speaking with you again.
All right, thank you.
Paul Manley is a Nanaimo-based filmmaker and a board member with the Council of Canadians. The Council of Canadians is Canada's leading social action organization, mobilizing a network of 60 chapters across the country. You can find them online at canadians.org.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.